we present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello, and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with an extract from the Northern Echo, read by Caroline Nichols.
A 12-week-old kitten was rescued from inside a living room sofa after fire officers chopped it up with hacksaws and hydraulic cutters.
Our thanks to Ian Forsyth for sending that in. Now, let's make the teams. Will you welcome first on my right Helen Lewis and Andrew Maxwell. And opposite them on my left, Zoe Lyons and Simon Evans. Helen, who's railing against a price hike?
This must be the story that it has been the biggest price hike in rail fares in 5 years, I think, an average of 3.4%. And the best thing about this was that our politicians handled it with the grace and competence for which they've become renowned. So you had Labour's transport spokesman, Andy... one of the Andys, anyway. He was trying to do interviews and he was stuck on a train outside Stevenage. So he had to try and do his interviews using the Virgin Wi-Fi. Now, I don't know if any of you have ever used the Virgin Wi-Fi. I would really rather, if someone said, do you want to put another man on the moon or reliably get the Virgin Wi-Fi to work? I would be getting buzzed out of retirement in an instant. And then you had Chris Grayling, who is the cabinet minister responsible, and unfortunately he couldn't do any interviews at all because he was in Qatar. And apparently the reason he was in Qatar is because we need to do some trade deals with Qatar. And I have to say, if that is the rationale, do not send Chris Grayling to Qatar. He's the worst cabinet minister in the whole of the cabinet, a very highly contested prize. And I just think more people don't hate him because they don't know who he is. I think they think he's Ian Duncan Smith turned up to 110%. But if they knew who he was... So, for example, he was Minister for Justice and he introduced everybody in the whole prison system to a completely new feeling that they never had before, which was being pleased to see Michael Gove. I don't hold out much hope for our rail system, I'm afraid.
Anyone know the surname of Labour's shadow transport secretary? He's called, you're called if you're listening, Andy McDonald. Does that you vaguely recognise that?
Yeah, it rings a bell.
Good old Andy McDonald. Old Andy.
So various routes then have gone up by, I mean, way, way more than could possibly be reasonably expected. They're not in line with inflation or indeed people's salary increases.
It's outrageous. I mean, it is outrageous. And it's year on year on year, and every year they say it's for rail improvements. And you think, there have been that many increases that by now, surely my train should be pulled by a pride of golden magic swans from Brighton to London. I mean, if you turn up last minute to get a train from Manchester to London, it's actually cheaper to fly to Spain. Get another flight back from Spain to London. That might be the cheapest way of doing than avoiding rail.
Maybe that is why Chris Grayling has gone to Qatar. He was trying to get...
Yeah.
But if you ask people that work for train companies, they would say that they've suffered from underfunding for years, and they say, well, we need this money to invest in infrastructure, which is basically business jargon for suck it up or learn to fly.
This is pretty much Zoe's experience. You Southern Rail from Brighton, and I'm aware that there's been a number of strikes. I try and remain neutral. I think it's perfectly possible that there is a justifiable reason why drivers of trains earn twice as much as people who drive vehicles which require the steering application. I understand there's a certain amount of tension over whether or not guards need to remain on trains, whether they need to employ guards. That seems to be a lot of the industrial action, certainly, that we've been experiencing. And I'm in favour of trying to keep people in employment, so I try and generate enough activity every time I take a train journey that they would feel that they really should have employed a guard to mitigate what went on. I mean, it's quite easy to get it started nowadays. You just play some loud music on your phone. I usually find a bit of Stormzy or a Grimy Rascal or one of these in the middle. And then you sit back and put your feet up on the passenger opposite, and pretty soon it'll all kick off, you know.
And you're creating opportunities.
Exactly, yeah. Right. I'm justifying their existence. That's how I like to think.
We've become so used to rubbishy service, though, in this country. I was on the train not so long ago, again, it was a Southern Rail train, and I got on the train, and the conductor came on. We were already 10 minutes late leaving Victoria. And he went, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry about this. He went, to be honest with you, I've even stopped telling my wife when to expect me home.
I I think they should introduce three classes in order to rationalise the current ticket price structure, which will enable people who can't afford these increases. You have first class, which on Southern basically entitles you to a seat with an anti-macassar. No other advantage whatsoever. Second class should be the guarantee of a seat, and third class should be a sort of cattle truck with some Velcro on the walls. And you could call that frottage class, if you like. And, you know, some people would probably relish the opportunity for a bit of human contact. We live in a world where loneliness is as much a killer as anything else.
I was on a really, really old train recently the toilet was tiny. I went into the toilet and I thought, I can't hide in here for 3 hours.
You're using a very old-fashioned technique there. The way to do it in terms of avoiding paying a ticket, which is what you're implying, is that you wait till somebody else goes into the toilet and then you knock on the door and say, tickets, please, and they pass them under the door. And you...
This is the rail fares hike, with prices on routes nationwide being increased by up to 3.6%. This means an annual season ticket from, for instance, Cheltenham to London has gone up by £460. Still, that's a small price to pay for the luxury of spending 5 hours a day staring out of the window, wondering why you ever thought this was a life worth living. On the day the price rise came in, a faulty train prevented the Shadow Transport Secretary, who I hardly need remind you is Andy MacDonald, from reaching a rail fares protest in Leeds, which as a result had to be cancelled. Just think, if it wasn't for one mechanical fault, the government could have been toppled and we could now be living in a socialist utopia. Truly a narrow escape. The trains are much less expensive in Europe, but in fairness, they will only take you to other places in Europe and are, as a result, worthless. Trains have been a part of British life since the opening of the world's first public railway from Stockton to Darlington in 1825. I don't know what that says about Stockton, that they needed to invent an entirely new means of transport just to get out of it, but for their sakes, I really hope that Darlington turned out to be everything that they dreamt of. Too much to have. Andrew, who does Donald Trump think is madder than he is?
This is his erstwhile best buddy, Bannon. They've fallen out. The idea of them falling out and me having to pick a team over whose side I'm on, I just can't decide. It's like watching two tramps fight. I don't care who wins, I just wanted to go the distance. You know, it's basically a book has come out, and Steve Bannon has contributed to this book about, you know, mentioning his time in the White House, and he said that Donald Jr. meeting this Russian dude was potentially treasonous and various other bits and pieces. And Donald Trump has gone nuts, and as of the last day or so, has tried to get the book banned, to slap a legal writ of some sort on this book and not get it published because it's really negative about him and his presidency. But I don't think he needs to worry about it because, you know, he's upset. That he's worried that his base will fall away if they find out what's in the book. But they're not going to find out because it's in a book. So I think the secrets of the book are safe in the book, unless this book gets serialised in bumper stickers. Donnie and his naughty secrets are safe.
I can't wait for the movie, though, because that will come out at some point. The sort of Bannon v. Trump movie will come out. I hope it's like a sort of feud type movie, like sort of Bette Davis, Joan Crawford type affair, where they both hate each other, you know, and there's brilliant lines in it. You wouldn't be this awful to me if I wasn't in this White House, but you are, Trump! You are in the White House! Classic.
What's your view on this, Simon?
Well, I think it's obviously you've heard the orthodox establishment view of Trump, which is that he's a lunatic bordering on homicidal mania. And yet, the Dow is at an all-time high of 25,000. A record number of new jobs have been created. The reality is that the North Korean situation, which he inherited from the previous administration, and indeed that of the previous two, which have been allowed to develop to potentially catastrophic levels, has simmered gently, and North Korea and South Korea have reopened various channels of communication. Syria is in a better state than he found it a year ago. And at this point in George W. Bush's administration, he had inherited an absolutely catastrophic terrorist act and had responded to it with completely uncoordinated and incoherent beginnings of war on two different fronts, which continue to rumble on to this day. So actually, objectively speaking, I think he's probably the most successful president of my lifetime. But, you know, that's obviously not the orthodox view.
No, but you've argued it with vim and vigour.
There is a small problem with this book.
Which
is that I think a lot of it might be made up. So there's lots of conversations where they kind of say, Rupert Murdoch sighed sexily, and you think, were you there? Is that a thing that can happen?
Is that how he's described as sighing in the book?
There's definitely a bit where he gets on the phone and said, Rupert Murdoch sighed, and you think, well, how do you...
And you just, well, you just sort of, age, you just internally was... thought sexily, did you?
Well, you can hear it now, can you?
All sides are sexy.
That was a hell of a phone call.
Do we know that's it was a sigh, or was it might just be a little bit of air coming out of the colostomy bag?
This is the battle between Donald Trump and his former adviser Steve Bannon, who the president says has lost his mind after contributing to a tell-all book about the White House. Trump's lawyers have issued a cease and desist order against Bannon and against Reality, which they claim is consistently damaging their client's reputation. Bannon has contributed to a book by Michael Wolff called Fire and Fury, which purports to give a detailed picture of life inside Trump's White House. While researching the book, Wolff was given unrestricted access to Trump, a privilege usually reserved for top-level White House aides and literally any Russian. If you can't picture Steve Bannon, just imagine that you'd ordered Michael Douglas constructed by the Build-A-Bear Workshop. Trump responded to the comments by claiming Bannon had lost his mind before hopping on Twitter to casually bait a psychopath with nuclear weapons into an allegorical willy measuring competition. 2 points to Andrew. Zoe, whose operation has been cancelling operations?
Ah, this is a story about the NHS winter crisis that comes round, well, every year at winter. It happens around the Christmas period when hospitals become their busiest for various reasons. The A&E is getting inundated with drunks who perhaps need a piece of mistletoe surgically removed from their anatomy after a party night out. Or indeed there are just families that have got together over the Christmas period and take a break from the chaos and madness of their own families and just like to relax in the chaos and madness of an A&E department for a while. So the NHS is suffering a winter crisis. Long waiting times in A&E, ambulances not being able to deliver patients to A&E, patients blocking beds because there's no social care for them to move into, there's no flow of patients, and so as a result, Jeremy Hunt has announced that up to 50,000 planned operations this month will now be postponed or cancelled. And he came out and he said, you know, that this is better than last year when we also had a winter crisis, because at least these cancelled operations are planned as opposed to last-minute cancellations that there were last year. I mean, he gave a sort of heartfelt speech and apologise to those patients who would be inconvenienced. The problem with trying to give a heartfelt speech is you actually do need a heart in the first place. Theresa May, though, bless her, trumpeted in and said that actually there was not really a crisis and they were better prepared for winter than any other time, which is lovely, because her ability to sort of see the positive in any dire situation is now absolutely remarkable, isn't it?
Yes, she seems to be a great morale booster. Well, to be run.
The horrible pictures where you see some poor person who's just had an operation then has to make small talk with Theresa May.
You come round from a general anaesthetic and she's standing there, you think... Well, this hasn't gone well, has it?
Apparently, the reason why this is the most pressured week of the year in the NHS is because it's straight after Christmas and it's old people have either gone to visit or been visited by their grandchildren. And the grandchildren have sneezed on them, and the old people have got bugs and flus and whatnot. It's like nature. It's red in tooth and claw. It's biological warfare of the generations. It's children trying to free up a bit of equity. But at the same time, it's the start of dry January. Surely, at the same time as there's more ill old people in the NHS, there's a lot less broken-armed, drunken idiots.
Yeah, but then I suppose at the same time there's fewer people self-medicating with whiskey and things like that. You've got that whiskey would cure most things, wouldn't it? But if people aren't drinking, they haven't got that opportunity. They've literally got to see a medical professional, I suppose. it's very difficult to say at first.
Well, you're saying that it's basically the whole country sobers up and goes, oh, my God, I'm quite ill.
Oh, my word, these are symptoms. I thought I was having fun. Simon, presumably you're about to tell us that the NHS has never been stronger.
The NHS continues to function as well as any other socialist enterprise on the face of the earth at the moment. I don't see why... This is its whole problem, is that it is a socialist religion. It's the last artefact of the last socialist government this country ever saw. It's time to be honest about it. It would stop creaking under the burden of expectation if everyone who could afford it simply took out private health insurance. I, for one, am currently signed up to the Dutch system. I just hop on a train if I need anything done. And, you know, it's well-funded. The accent alone makes me feel better as soon as I get there.
I mean, the thing is, you know, Jeremy Hunt continually mentions the ageing population as the problem for the creaking NHS. And you go, well, this isn't a surprise either. You should have planned for this, mate. We knew they were going to age. We've been ageing for 80 years. I mean, we've been ageing. It's not like all of a sudden there was a massive quantum leap and people went from 32 to...
I think people have always aged.
That's what I mean.
I think we're hanging on because we know that technology is just around the corner, which will solve this in the form of sex robots, which are going to cure a lot of society's most deeply entrenched problems, but in particular social care.
Surely that's not entirely what social care provides, surely. Some people just need shopping done for them, Simon.
Nine-tenths of it is the human... I mean, obviously, people...
Nine-tenths of social care is not sexual services. I know, you've hit us with a lot of statistics tonight, and I'm sure some of them are accurate, but that one seems a little bit off.
Presence of an empathetic humanoid companion who is able to administer to your fundamental basic needs. Sex robots can be programmed... to fulfil a wide range.
To be honest, he's right. If they're willing to do something sexual to you, they'll probably pop down the shops for you.
This is the winter crisis in the NHS, with Health Secretary Jeremy Hunt apologising to tens of thousands of patients whose operations were cancelled, saying, "This is absolutely not what I want." Theresa May has apologised, but claimed the NHS is better prepared than ever before. But that is no good. If everything's going incredibly badly, there's no comfort in having been really well prepared. No one falls off a cliff and on the way down thinks, "Well, thank goodness I'm wearing a really good pair of walking boots." I should say hello to anyone listening from hospital, where I know the news quiz is very popular, particularly in operating theatres, which use our cuttings as a form of local anaesthetic. Ultimately, the problem is that people insist on going to hospital when they're sick, rather than accepting that life is finite and there is no escape from the grave. Happy New Year. 2 points to Zoe. And at the end of round one, the scores are Helen and Andrew have 4, and so too do Zoe and Simon. We start round two with an advert seen on Gumtree.
Vintage board game, Escape from Colditz Castle, Blue Box Edition from 1971. Used condition, 3 escapees missing.
Thanks to Elizabeth Wrench for sending us that. Zoe, whose plans are bordering on chaos?
Is this the story about the Home Office's plans to bring in volunteer... border patrol guards? What could possibly go wrong? It was one of those stories that I read and I went, oh, I really hope this happens because I've got such a beautiful image of Dad's army in my head. The Home Office wants to encourage volunteers into becoming border guards across the country because there is a huge shortage, there's been job cuts, etc. And also, because we're an island, obviously, there's an awful lot of unguarded ports and points of entry into this country that have no border patrol whatsoever. It does beg the question, who would volunteer to be a border guard? Just Monty Python enthusiasts who would dress up as the Black Knight just stood there going, "None shall pass," you know. Because the thing is, according to this story, they'll have no power, these volunteer... what are they called? They're called Border Force Special Volunteer Force. Border Force Special Volunteer Force. Got my own bicycle. Yes. They'll have no power.
He's not going to get past this flask.
Yeah, look at this. Particularly when you think as well, post-Brexit, it's all going to get a little bit tighter around the borders, isn't it? It's all that's what it was about for a lot of people, wasn't it? Tightening our borders. Bringing back control.
And there's no way you can control something without Enid and George.
Absolutely.
are these jobs that need to be done, or are they just trying to create a thing for people to do this job?
This could be for the
Boy Scouts could get involved, possibly, or...
I know exactly who would do it. Near where I live, there's a beach where, not last summer, summer before, there was a boatload of illegals rocked up on the beach.
And they could do it.
Yeah, we could.
That's a great idea.
It's all cash in hand.
They know the coast. There was a boatload of Albanian illegals being brought in by a couple of Cockney gangsters. But, like, for the week afterwards, wow. There was hundreds and hundreds of dudes out there with binoculars. Like,
literally, we are the last line of defence.
And each one of them, they look like sort of like a far-right version of a train spotter.
But it will attract the kind of genteel amateur fascist, won't it?
Yeah.
So every night, thousands of people would have to be deployed to do this job if it needs doing then. The entire coast needs to be manned at... What, all times, just in the hours of darkness?
Well, 7,000 miles of British coast in darkness out there with a little lamp and a sort of little tin thing. This will become a national pastime. It'll be fantastic.
Changing the road signs, that was one of the things. Yeah.
Just outfox them. You can't just judge people by the skin colour. This country has got many very valuable brown and black people in it. So you can't just assume that that's a foreigner. You've got to do something that only a British person would know. You've got to break into some sort of song that only they could follow. You've got to, one after another, you've got to sit them down, look them in the eye and go, you do the shake and vac. Right? And unless they say, you put the prisoners back, please, on your way. Because if they don't know the second line of that, that's a true Johnny Foreigner right there.
This is the news that the Home Office is discussing plans to plug gaps in the UK's border force with volunteers. You just find yourself asking, as they must do in so many Radio 5 Live commissioning meetings, who is this going to appeal to other than racists? The proposed volunteer force has been described as a dad's army operation, conjuring up pictures of a motley crew of lovable characters ham-fistedly burning down a mosque while shouting, they don't like it, up 'em. You probably won't get any real powers. It'll be a complete rip-off. You'll be told you can join in with the internal examinations. You'll just be holding a torch. All I can say is, do you get nectar points? Because if so, hand me a baton. 2 points to Zoe. Simon, have a listen to this. Oh, goodness, that's aged well. Simon. Residents of which street name want to ring the changes?
Oh, yes, I did see this. This is... it's a street... It's called, I think, Bell End Street. Somewhere in the West Midlands, there are residents who... I don't know why they haven't noticed. Obviously, a conversation was precipitated somehow one morning. You've seen where we live. You would think that would come to people's attention when they purchase a place, but perhaps it was dark. I don't know. But yes, they've all gradually come to the realisation that they all live on a street called Bellend. And there are a number of... There's Mincing Lane off it, I think, and Frenulum Avenue, and a big shiny purple house at one end is a particular... It's a... Sounds laughable, and indeed it is laughable, but the residents complain two things. Firstly, they say their children are teased mercilessly at school, which you really think they could have seen that coming. But also, more importantly, apparently house prices take a hit, something like a third lower, I think. According to one report, I find this really extraordinary, but it said... Against the local average was £160,000, but these houses were as much as £60,000 less because they were on a street called Bell End. I think that's 60 grand payday just for putting up with that. I mean, found some way of pronouncing it, like Hyacinthe Bouquet, don't you? There's a very famous road in Paris called Rue de Balzac, and, you know, they... they're willing to put up with it.
I think my favourite thing about the whole story is that there was a petition, a pro-Bell End petition... immediately sprang up. And there was a quote that someone gave to the local paper that said, for me, I don't think it's about changing the street. Once a Bell End, always a Bell End. Then it makes you proud to be British, that.
There's tons of these. There's another one last year. There was this place in Derbyshire called Isis Way. And right. half the street wanted to change the name for obvious reasons.
Yeah. To Al-Qaeda Crescent.
It's, you know, Duke, it's a bit more classy.
So Derby.
Derby. It's a funny old accent, Derby.
It sounds it.
This is a petition drawn up by residents of Bell End in Rowley Regis in the West Midlands who are asking Sandwell Council to change their street's name. The residents of Bell End petition their local council via change.org, whose slogan is Help Change the World, presumably one phallic street name at a time. Names like these sound rude, but they always have serious historic roots. Bell End, for example, is named after a man...
Pathetic. Absolutely pathetic.
Bell End, for example, is named after a man who used to live there, who really was an absolute Bell End. This has made me a laughing stock. Nobody takes me seriously anymore, said local resident Mr. Peter Tiny Penis. Let's hope the residents are successful in their petition for a name change. I, for one, would pay to be the council employee who goes down there to unveil the new street sign for Balls Out Boulevard. Simon, before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they'd like to share? Andrew.
This has been sent in by Andy Smaller, and it was found in the Chippenham Gazette and Herald. Dangerous dog owner must pay £2,000 to bite victim.
Zoe.
This was sent in from Julia in Lincolnshire. It's on the Metro Online, and it's the reason I'll never go on a cruise ship. It's a headline that reads, 200 people struck down with diarrhea on cruise ship offering bottomless buffet.
Thank you. Now let's take a look at the final score. Helen and Andrew have 9, but this week's winners are Zoe and Simon with 10. Before we leave you, here is a wanted advert spotted on Facebook by Alex Henderson in West Sussex.
Hello, I'm looking for a free or cheap double mattress. I'm heavily pregnant, so I'd be extremely grateful if you're also able to deliver.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Helen Lewis, Andrew Maxwell, Zoe Lyons and Simon Evans. In the chair was Miles Jupp and the news was read by me, Caroline Nichols. The chair script was written by Madeline Brettingham, Max Davis and James Keppel, with additional material by Sarah Gibbs and Mike Shepherd. The producer was Richard Morris and it was a BBC Studios production.